91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour, South Florida issues with veteran journalist Dan Christensen and Tony Doris. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Tony Doris is a longtime South Florida journalist who writes for the Palm Beach Post. What are the plans of West Palm's biggest landowner, billionaire Jeff Green? He's one approval away from constructing the $250 million One West Palm skyscraper. Dan Christensen is the founder and editor of the independent Broward Bulldog website and blog. Among the Bulldog's stories is for-profit inmate health services at state correctional institutions. Should a CEO of such a service be on the Florida Constitutional Revision Commission? Stay tuned. Topical Currents up next after the news. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, it's today's Topical Currents, one of our Behind the Headlines segments this afternoon. We have two accomplished journalists at hand, both with long ties to South Florida.
Both are longtime Topical Currents participants as well. Dan Christensen is the founder and editor of the Florida Bulldog, a nonprofit independent news website and blog. He has several stories to relate. Welcome to you, Dan. Welcome back.
Good to see
Bernie.
You.
That too.
I'm off to a good start.
He's 105 years old. He's not responsible for us.
Also, we have Tony Doris, staff writer of the Palm Beach Post. He has some interesting Palm Beach County issues to talk about. And Tony, I might add, you first appeared on Topical Currents in its first year on the air. Looking back, that was 1999.
Wow.
And you haven't changed.
No. Thank you. I am honored to be here always.
Okay, so let's begin. Welcome to you both. Dan Christensen, last time you were here, we were here with Senator Graham, and we were talking about this 9/11 Review Commission report and your Freedom of Information Act lawsuit and all that stuff and the links to the Saudis for the 9/11 attack funding. So whatever became of this, and where do things stand now?
Well, I was notified today by our attorney, Tom Julin, that the judge, Altanaga, has issued a final order in the case, citing we had been trying to dispute with the FBI exactly what she had previously ordered released. There were lots and lots and lots and lots of pages. There were lots of things that she ordered released. There were certain things that she ordered withheld, and we're now in dispute about that. It appears as if she sided again with the FBI on this, although I have not read the order myself, so I don't know exactly. But we still have had a lot of stuff released. One thing actually was picked up by Vice News yesterday because it had been publicly released by the FBI in a general way on something called governmentattic.org. And it was a 9/11 overview. It was a PowerPoint presentation that was made by the FBI about 9/11 and how it unfolded to the 9/11 Review Commission. That has gone all over the world. I got an email from somebody in Australia today showing that they had picked up and written a story about this. So there still seems to be intense interest in this all around the world as to what's going on.
What is the crux of the issue?
Well, the crux of the issue for us is the Freedom of Information Act and the fact that it allows so many exemptions to the Act. The Act generally presumes that information should be released, but these exemptions, for instance, one in particular that the FBI has used successfully here, is they are allowed to shield their techniques and procedures. And they have used that to hide more, I believe, than just techniques.
And what is it believed that they're hiding?
We believe that they're hiding information about Saudi Arabia's involvement in all this.
And the funding.
And the funding of this. Those documents have been specifically withheld from us. The judge had earlier said that they should be released, and then after the FBI made some more legal arguments, she changed her mind. I personally was not convinced by those arguments, but she was, and she's the controlling person here. Anyway, while the case in Miami may be over, we probably will be appealing this, And the FBI probably will be appealing it as well because they're unhappy with certain technical decisions that the judge made. And in the meantime, there is a second lawsuit, which was the first lawsuit that we filed back in 2012, similar Freedom of Information Act lawsuit. And here we are 5 years later and 3 years after Judge Zlock in Fort Lauderdale ordered the FBI to produce their information on 9/11 held in their Tampa field office, which amounted to 80,000 pages of information. The judge has been going through that for 3 years now, and we have no idea where that review stands because we have not been allowed to have any sort of status conference.
Dan, if I could ask you to back up a second, I think what would help people understand what's going on here a lot more, if you do a sentence or two about the house in Sarasota.
Right. All right. Well, that's how all this began for us. I guess I'm a little in the weeds on this sometimes. Anyway, there was a guy named Anthony Summers, who's an author from Ireland, who I've known for a long time. He contacted me in 2011, about the end of August, saying that he had had information about a house in a wealthy area in Sarasota, a development called Prestancia, where there was information that a guy who lived there who was a Saudi who was married to a woman who had connections back to the royal family, that some of the hijackers had visited that home, Muhammad Atta in particular, the guy who piloted the plane into the North Tower, the first tower.
And he was also the one who took flying lessons in...
Yes, nearby. All the pilots took flying lessons, all but one took flying lessons about 10 miles away down at Venice's municipal airport there. So there was this nexus there. Anyway, we reported on that. I worked with Tony on that. We reported on that. And then we filed suit in 2000. We filed just a regular Freedom of Information Act request in 2011, requesting their file on this because the original story that we reported, we spoke with Bob Graham and he didn't know anything about this. And
he was on the 9/11 commission.
He was on the 9/11 commission. He was on Congress's, he was co-chairman of Congress's joint inquiry into 9/11, which lasted about a year and then was sort of succeeded by the 9/11 commission.
Wasn't he on the Senate Intelligence Committee too?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
He was also. Yeah, he was chairman. Yeah. Well, that's what gave him the position of co-chairman of the joint inquiry, which was a highly unusual event. It was where both sides of Congress, the House and the Senate, came together, which just doesn't happen very often, to create this commission to look into this and find out what happened. They knew nothing about this. The FBI never reported it to them. When they had information in their own files that we later found out that said that the Saudis in Sarasota had, quote, many connections, unquote, to the hijackers. Now, why this wasn't reported, we've never gotten an explanation for that. But what we've run into now as we've tried to get information through the courts has been, while we have the Freedom of Information Act, it is so riddled with exemptions that allow the agencies to withhold this information, frankly, in sometimes many trivial type cases. I won't bother you with the details, but the more I learn about the Freedom of Information Act,
the more it doesn't seem like it's freedom of information.
Yeah, correct. It's more like obstruction of information.
Right. Well, okay. Let's switch gears, Tony.
That's me.
This is great. Okay, so it seems that West Palm is struggling with issues that plague their neighbors to the south, Miami-Dade and Broward. But I love this. You said one of the recent anti-waterfront tower flyers hitting the mailboxes in West Palm had the headline, "Do you want West Palm Beach to look like Miami?"
Yeah, that would be the atrocity that they see.
Yeah.
But that is how people up there think because, they come down here and, oh, the traffic is unbearable and look at the skyline blocking off the water. And West Palm Beach has been working really hard to make itself more livable, more walkable, a fun place to be. But at the same time, they don't want the waterfront walled off. It has a very beautiful waterfront, Lake Worth Lagoon. Comes up right up against downtown West Palm Beach. And about 10 years ago, 11 years ago, there was a voters' referendum saying no building along this waterfront section can be more than five stories. Well, now the city is entertaining a notion by related companies to build a 25-story tower on a lot where it's only zoned for five stories.
Isn't Related the one here with George?
There are two different Relateds.
Oh, okay.
Jorge Perez is down here in Miami, right. And there's a New York Related. They have some ties, but it's the New York folks that are mostly responsible for that one. So there's a big debate right now. Do we try to bring in more great jobs by having Class A office space? There's not enough, you know, top-grade office buildings in West Palm Beach. There are only about 3.5. And so if you want to bring jobs, you're going to see all the companies that want to have classy offices go elsewhere, and that's what's been happening. On the other hand, you've got people who live downtown, and there's been a huge flurry of condo construction. There are a lot of apartment buildings go up, and people who live downtown don't want the traffic. They don't want cars just blocking up the roads, and they especially don't want their views blocked.
So this is being presented also in the fact that they say that without the growth, there are going to be higher taxes.
Right, and that's exactly right. And taxes, tax revenues have been increasing. Property values are going up in West Palm Beach. As the economy rises, it's been going up pretty well. But West Palm Beach is an urban area, and they need their money for a lot of programs and projects to fight off poverty, to make it the great city they want to make it. More companies coming in and high-paying jobs is the goal.
Should we take a break right now before we get to something? Okay, we're speaking with Dan Christensen from the Florida Bulldog and Tony Doris with the Palm Beach Post. How many years have you been there?
13.
And topical currents, short break. We'll be right back and talk about more issues.
And we return. It's today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman with you on this Wednesday afternoon. Dan Christensen is our guest, the founder and editor of the Florida Bulldog, also Tony Doris, staff writer of the Palm Beach Post. Dan Christensen, let's talk a little bit about Rick Scott and the ties to Mike Pence and the fundraising that was done for the governor's race back in Indiana before Mike Pence became the nominee for vice president.
Right. Well, Pence was in a really tough fight. He had been, as a matter of fact, the polls showed that he was, I believe, was losing at that point. And he'd said some unpopular things about gays and other things up there that was hurting him. Anyway, he came to South Florida with Rick Scott, our governor, to raise funds back in February 2016. They went to a sort of Republican-heavy law firm called Tripp Scott in Fort Lauderdale. And that was on, I believe it was February 5th, 2016. Well, 2 months later, which makes all this interesting, and a lot of money was raised, 2 months later, Mike Pence, who was still the governor there, announced a $650,000 incentives package for a company that is in large part owned by the governor, or was at the time, by Governor Scott. So you had these two governors, and one helps one fundraise, the other one gives an incentives package to the company that...
What was the reason for him coming to South Florida?
Just to raise money.
But why here? I mean,
because South Florida is traditionally a spot where
Republicans can raise
Both parties. There's a lot of money down here, and they come down here. But especially when you bring the governor with you, that helps. And even Rick Scott gave $5,000 to Pence. And at the time, that was pretty strange because the Tampa Bay Times reported how, specifically, they called it unusual because, quote, he has never given more than $5,000 to a Florida candidate other than himself. A story they did at the time also noted that Pence had, quote, picked up more campaign cash from Florida than any other state except Indiana and Washington, D.C. Now, all that ended, of course, in July, mid-July, when President Trump tapped him to be, trapped Pence to be his vice president.
So is there anything illegal here or unethical?
I'm not an arbiter of those sorts of disputes, but clearly... it doesn't look very good that our governor, Governor Rick Scott, does essentially a political favor. And by the way, they raised, and these were Scott supporters, kicked in about $125,000 in that six-month period to Pence. So the governor had some impact here. And he brings him down, does him this favor, and then there's a turnaround. I mean, you know, you can look at it and see what you think. Did Governor Pence know that Rick Scott owned a piece of this?
Just a coincidence, Dan.
Yeah.
That he was giving the $635,000
in incentives. Now, the other part to all this is that the company was called Continental Structural Plastics. The governor had bought that along with some partners back in, I believe it was 2005, and their goal was to grow the company because what it is they provide special plastic parts, lightweight parts, using composite materials that are used in airplanes and cars and things like that. And it's become a really big business. As a matter of fact, earlier this year in January, the company was sold to Teijin, which is a large conglomerate in Japan, and for the total price of $825 million. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't know exactly how much the governor made from that, but we've reported approximately $200 million because the governor has his funds has his assets in a blind trust. I use that in quotation marks because it is what is known as a state-qualified blind trust. There are not very many safeguards. The trust is run by one of his former business partners, so the governor's not supposed to know what's in it, but I figure he may know since I know, and I can say what's in it.
Not too blind.
Right. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, we're talking about South Florida issues this afternoon. Our number, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email, that may be faster, that's radio@WLRN.org, radio@WLRN.org. If you email, please keep them brief.
Tony, I want you to talk about Jeff Green and what's going on with that, because you said, is he all hat and no cowboy? He has all these properties, but he's not developing them.
Jeff Green is a guy. He was a developer in California for a while. He was one of the guys, if you saw the movie The Big Short, they didn't picture him in that movie, but he was one of the handful of people who guessed right that the market was going to tumble, that the real estate market was going to fall, and he became a multi-billionaire from that. He has a place in Palm Beach, and he has been buying up Palm Beach property in and around downtown. And he has plans for, I don't know, it seems like a dozen different buildings. I mean, in one area, he's bought up like 20 acres. He's got properties right as you come into downtown West Palm Beach. And the question people have been asking is, all right, this guy has bought up all this land. He's the single biggest landowner in West Palm Beach. Is he going to build anything? And he's done little things, you know, like he built a school, a private school for his kids to go to. Well, it's also for a lot of other people to go to. Right. It's a great school that he's poured money into. But it's from real estate point of view, it's pretty small potatoes. But he's got plans also to build a twin 30-story towers that would be the tallest buildings in West Palm Beach for offices, hotels, apartments. He's got other plans where he's building, he wants to build micro apartments, which are 450
square feet. That's really interesting.
And people have really been responding to that, but because rents have been going up in downtown West Palm Beach, how does anybody in the workforce afford to live there unless maybe you're willing to take a small unit and not need a car and all that? So the question is, what's going to be built and when? And so we're waiting to see.
Can I chime in here? Because some of our audience will probably remember that Green ran for Senate a few years ago.
Thanks for reminding me. He did.
Does he have any further plans to get into politics? He was involved in a nasty libel suit with the Tampa Bay Times. It was recently settled that I know about.
He says he's not interested in politics now, but he would never say no to anything. He's got his fingers in a million different real estate and other projects. He's very busy. He goes to the World Economic Forum in Davos every year. He has created his own annual forum where people come from all over the world to hear really top, you know, TED-level speakers. So, he says he hasn't ruled out, another run for governor or anything. But right now, he is pretty busy. although, you know, we have yet to see his projects come out of the ground by and large. But, you know, he's working on it, and he's being a smart businessman, waiting for the construction prices to get to where he needs them to start building.
The one that you mentioned, the twin tower, 30-story towers, there's also that conflict with the related groups or the related companies competing building, right?
Right. Jeff Green has taken advantage of city incentives to build high-rise office towers off the waterfront.
Right.
He's been planning it for a couple of years. He's got permits and approvals for this and that, but it hasn't started building yet. And one of the things he's afraid of is, what if Related gets to build on the waterfront a 25-story tower that's going to compete with his, which is several blocks off the waterfront? And Jeff Green's argument is that it's really not fair. He played pretty much by the rules, built where the city wanted him to build, and now somebody else is going to get to build right on the waterfront. And if you're a tenant that's looking for Class A offices, if you're a major law firm, you know, like just like in Miami, these kind of firms, they're going to pay top dollar if you have fantastic waterfront views. So Jeff Green is annoyed that and has said that he might back out of his $250 million twin tower project if Related gets to build its where it wants to.
Are there any tax incentives involved here?
There always are of some sort, but I'm not sure what he got. What Jeff Green got was the right to build, you know, about five stories or so taller than previously would have been allowed, because he was building a certain amount, wanted to build offices and hotel space, which the city at the time needed.
Also, you wrote that he's already spent $4 million on the plans and permits for those towers.
Yeah.
And he still might scrap the whole thing.
What's his name? Architectonica is his architect who's drawn up the beautiful artist renderings for several of the buildings that he hopes to do downtown. And so he's spent for that kind of thing. He spent for plans for the foundation, for the underpinnings of the building. Unlike most developers, he's got his own money to invest and do this. So sometimes, instead of waiting for lenders who would slow him down, he's using his own money so he can go ahead and start the planning process. And I can't verify his numbers, but that is what he said he spent so far just to get ready for this project. So would he pull out of it? You know, who knows?
Again, our number, if you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, you're certainly welcome. And we have lines open, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email radio@WLRN.org.
Dan, there's never a dearth of material for certain, but this was a good one. Armor Correctional Health Services and their owner, Dr. Jose Armas, they've sort of been kicked out of Florida State, and then they come here. And what happens?
No, they were kicked out of New York.
I mean, I said right. Florida. No, I meant New York State.
Right. No, they've been here. They're based here. And they've been here a while. Their history actually goes back to Broward County and former Sheriff Ken Jenny. They got their first contract to provide health care services to inmates under him. And they have built from there.
But I mean, they... I guess the order I'm talking about, I realize they were here first, but the order I'm talking about is, so they're kicked out of New York, and then now their
the guy,
owner.
Right. Dr. Jose Armas, he was appointed, I think it was back in March or April, to a seat, a pretty coveted seat on the Constitution Revision Commission, which is going to monkey with our Constitution here.
Yeah. How did that happen?
The governor, Rick Scott, appointed him. He's a loyal donor to both Rick Scott and the Republican Party. And these days, apparently, you do not pick people based upon their qualifications to examine the Constitution.
Exactly. We're talking about, changing the Constitution for the state. Oh, that's you. We were wondering where that was coming from.
I kept hearing
the Rolling Stones.
Well, actually, the constitutional revision is state mandated, I think, every 10 years.
Yes, it is. And in the past, it's also, there have been political appointees as well.
A lot of gerrymandering. And,
well, it's not for gerrymandering. It's to determine, you know, what issues out there require constitutional changes. And the people that control it will decide what goes on the ballot for voters.
Maybe sunshine law.
Yeah.
That could be in jeopardy.
Yeah. Well, whatever they're thinking about. There has not been much coverage of it. So I'm not quite sure exactly what it is they're up to, frankly. But I thought it was odd that, you know, New York saw fit.
Yeah, to get rid of the
company. And yet here, a few months later.
He's given this esteemed position.
Correct.
We've been concentrating on Palm Beach and Broward County mostly. But, Dan, let's touch on the Miami-Dade School District and the hiring of the Ballard Partners as a lobbying firm in Tallahassee.
Well, that was an interesting, you know, another interesting development here. The guy who, Brian Ballard, is a...
all of the urban school districts are in big trouble as far as funding.
Yeah, well, he's a... I think they went to him because he has connections to Trump. And... Brian Ballard, he's a pretty respected, well-known lobbyist down here, which he charges a lot of money. He got a five-year contract, initial three-year contract that pays $324,000, but it also can be extended for 2 years. And it appears as if it, I mean, unless something, usually these contracts are extended without any sort of hassle unless there's a major issue of some kind. But the whole idea here is that Alberto Carvalho decided to, because he's the one who recommended this to the school board, that they needed somebody with juice with Trump to lobby for them. So they picked Ballard, probably a good pick.
With a heavily Republican legislature, of course, it couldn't hurt.
Sure. Well, I think they want him. They're just as interested in what he can do in Washington as to what he can do here in Florida.
Mm, yeah.
Tony, talk about Okeechobee Boulevard and the problems they're having there with the traffic.
For people who don't know West Palm Beach too well, the main gateway into downtown West Palm Beach is Okeechobee Boulevard. It comes right off I-95 and into downtown. And it's been getting busier and busier every year. We have our convention centers right on that road on one side, the Kravis Center, our performing arts centers on the other, and it leads right in towards City Place and the entire office district. And it's been a major source of contention because as more and more people want to build more hotels and more office buildings, more cars are coming through there. Pedestrians can't walk across eight lanes. And so there's been a huge traffic study about that's been going on for a year or so. So what to do about all the traffic? All right. Are we short on time here?
No. Okay. We're going to take it, but finish.
I saw them winking at each other. So the problem is the timing of it all. Related, we just talked about, wants to build another office tower. Jeff Green wants to build a couple of office towers. There are hotels going up everywhere. So how do you let all this construction go on? How do you approve it without first dealing with these horrible traffic issues? And, you know, it's, to be honest, I was in traffic an hour yesterday on I-95 coming into Miami. So the traffic up in West Palm Beach is just not anywhere near the scale as to what you have here.
Yeah.
Problems. But for West Palm Beach, people aren't used to it, and they want to look forward. They want to solve the problem before it gets to the stage where it's like, you know, Broward or Miami traffic.
What a concept.
So what they're thinking about.
And keep views of the
good
ocean.
Luck.
Yeah.
Good luck. I mean, there are all kinds of things on the table. Do they put the tri-rail tracks underground? Do they put Okeechobee Boulevard underground for a block or two? Do they put flyways so people can walk over Okeechobee Boulevard? Do they change the signs? Do they put bus lanes with transponders so that the buses go right through all the lights? They're considering all these things. They have a list of maybe 15 or 20 short, long, and midterm projects that they can do to try to solve the problem. But, you know, West Palm Beach is the capital of Palm Beach County, and it's growing, and it is a great place to be. So, you know, it's a good sign that they're looking into these problems, but at the same time, it kind of makes you wonder. They're busy considering all these office and construction projects without first solving the traffic problem or planning for it. So hopefully one will catch up with the other.
Well, that would be good, so it doesn't get like it is here. I mean, they don't deal with it here until after the fact.
That's it. I mean, they never ended up building your metro rail out to Kendall.
Well, we just had a show on that.
Oh, in Fort Lauderdale, we have the ongoing squabble over whether or not there should be the downtown streetcar, the Wave.
And what happens in Palm Beach is there is a lot more pressure to build more housing developments out west of the city of Palm Beach. So that does just what Kendall did here and what Miramar did in Broward County. It just puts more cars out there that are going to try to come down through all the roads toward.
Well, there's been a lot of development in downtown Fort Lauderdale too, and it seems to be there's going to be a lot until we hit whatever the next bust is. What will cause that bust? Will it be a natural, a hurricane, or what?
I always joke that we're going to need jetpacks, but what is interesting is that they are. You do hear that come up in discussions about traffic, the self-driving cars. That's not even something that's discussed as something ridiculous in the future anymore. People are the city planners and people involved in city government at all levels, including the mayor, are talking about let's make sure our planning, you know, takes
rail,
into account.
Rail could be antiquated because of that.
Yeah. We're speaking with Dan Christensen. He's the founder and editor of the Florida Bulldog, and that was Tony Doris, veteran journalist with the Palm Beach Post. We'll be right back.
And we're back with today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman with you, along with Dan Christensen and Tony Doris, both are reporters with a long time of South Florida experience. Dan Christensen, the founder of the and editor of the Florida Bulldog, and Tony Doris, staff writer of the Palm Beach Post. Again, we have lines open if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576, or email, that's radio@wlrn.org. That may be the fastest way to get on the air. Dan, how about the federal suit that involves the Democratic Party members and Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz that's going on?
Well, it's a strange story. What perhaps may be the most strange thing about it is the fact that it's been going on for over a year and nobody in what has come to be called the mainstream media, no newspapers, has written about it, and it's a national story. New York Times, Washington Post, Miami Herald, Sun Sentinel, they're all absent on this story. And the Post, too, I might add.
Why do you think that is?
I don't. I literally have been scratching my head to understand. It's not that they don't know, because this has been covered in, shall we say, the alternate media. Newsmax has written about it, and others. And
cynics would say it's the the mainstream media ignoring the liberal problems where there are while they're all over the conservatives.
That could be. I'm not that cynical. I don't know why they have ignored this story, but maybe that's right. But here's the what it's all about. It has to do with the presidential nominating process. A group of about I think it's 150 Democratic voters sued last year, a class action. Against both the Democratic National Committee and Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who had been the chairman of the party. And essentially what they're saying is that throughout this whole process, the party was supposed to remain neutral but did not and favored Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. A lot of the people that are involved in this as plaintiffs are former Sanders voters. And it's based here before Judge Locke in Fort Lauderdale. A guy named Cullen O'Brien is the attorney for the class action plaintiffs on this. And it got weird recently when he tried to get the court to order security guards for some of the plaintiffs here because of a number of incidents, strange incidents, you know, sort of phone calls, emails that were menacing. There was a break-in at somebody's home, a plaintiff's home, that they believe was caused by all this. Anyway, the judge denied to do that because he said it would tax the resources of the U.S. Marshals Service in order to do this. So that didn't happen. But it still throws in this weird thing. What's going on here? The complaint alleges things like fraud and negligence against both Wasserman Schultz and the Democratic National Committee. How this is going to play out, you know, I don't know. But the really explosive allegations here that, if proven, could create some serious problems. The Democratic Committee is going, or Democratic National Committee, or the lawyers for them, have gone in and said, hey, look, you can't mess with us. We get to do whatever we want in our nominating. If we want to go into a back room, smoke cigars, and come up with a candidate, you can't do anything about it. We have, you know, because the allegation, part of the allegation was they violated their own bylaws and rules.
And they're saying they can
violate
their own.
They're saying they can violate them and they can do whatever they want.
And then there's this additional bit of information that former aide of Debbie Wasserman Schultz is arrested trying to leave the country.
Yeah, a guy named Imran Awan, who was a staffer here, and he had been at the center of a criminal investigation that had been going on involving a number of Democratic lawmakers. But he was arrested trying to leave the country at, I believe it was Dulles Airport, and he's charged with bank fraud and is prevented from leaving the country while you know, the charges are pending here. And he worked for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And so this is just broken. We're not sure what's going on with it. But he apparently was accused of attempting to defraud the Congressional Credit Union, Congressional Federal Credit Union, by obtaining a $165,000 home equity loan for a rental property, which is against the credit union's policies since it's not the owner's primary residence. And the funds were then included as part of a wire transfer to two individuals in Faisalabad, Pakistan. In the meantime, the guy's wife had left several months ago, taken their kids and apparently some other stuff. She'd been a congressional staffer
as well.
And
where did she go?
She went to Pakistan, where they live, or where they're from.
Where they're from.
So it's like this has just emerged as a story. Exactly where it's going to go, we don't know. Is this money ultimately going to terrorists?
Right.
We don't know.
We have an emailer, Susan and Davey. As a person who works in Palm Beach during high season, when Mr. Trump is at Mar-a-Lago, you can't use Southern Boulevard, so traffic is even worse on Okeechobee. It took me more than an hour to get from near the Kravis Center to Bethesda by the Sea. Is anything being done to address this?
How do Palm Beachers feel about being home to the second White House, sort of?
You know, they're being very quiet about it, but when there was a while there where he came down almost every weekend for like 7 weeks in a row, and people were going nuts because Southern Boulevard, which goes right next to Mar-a-Lago, you know, has to be blocked off when he's coming through, and the airport, everywhere around the airport gets blocked off. And, you know, the answer to Susan is it's actually going to get worse because Southern Boulevard Bridge, it's that bridge is turned to be rebuilt and replaced. And so for the next 2 years, there's going to be construction that blocks up that end of Palm Beach for a while. The good news is, you know, the town of Palm Beach allowed Donald Trump to build a, well, not him, but his people to build a helipad at Mar-a-Lago, so he can, when he flies into Palm Beach International Airport on Air Force One, he can take a helicopter over to his house instead of blocking up the road so much.
Don't I recall remembering something that the people of Palm Beach were complaining that they weren't getting extra tax dollars?
Yeah, and I'm not sure what happened with it. I haven't heard of
in
anybody.
In New York City, of course.
Yeah, and
yeah, but
yeah, West Palm Beach, the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office, the town of Palm Beach. I don't know that they ever got a huge bundle of cash from the federal government to deal with security. So, you know, that was a big issue because, it does require everybody to mobilize. I found it interesting. I have a tiny little sailboat that bobs up and down on the Intracoastal now and then. And anybody with a boat that gets anywhere near Mar-a-Lago is swarmed by, you know, by boats with machine guns on the bow. So it's a little creepy. Even if you're not anywhere near, if you're just on the Intracoastal, you know, miles away, you can see these boats going up and down. It, you know, lets you know somebody's there.
We're speaking with Dan Christensen and Tony Doris. Our last break. When we come back, stay with us. If you're waiting on the phone there, I can't see the names, but we'll get your calls when we get back. Stay with us.
And we return with today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dan Christensen, and Tony Doris. Again, our number 1-800-743-9576 if you'd like to get in. Let's take a first call, Sergio in Del Rey. Hi there.
Sergio. Good afternoon, everybody.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have grown up in Del Rey for a long time now, and I've noticed a lot of development going on in downtown Del Rey. Every corner there's townhouses being built. And I'm just wondering, where is that going to go? Like they're picking up every piece of open land.
This is Tony. I'm not an expert on Del Rey's downtown specifically, but, you know, a rising tide floats all boats, and these are good times, or at least they have been for a while, for developers. Interest rates are fairly low, and the economy seems stable. So my guess is you're going to see some more construction for quite a while.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Okay.
And we'll move along to Paul in Delray. Delray is cornering the market. Paul, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. I was wondering if there's been any discussion about using motorcycle police officers to help traffic flow or restricting access to certain major, like the Palmetto or other highways during high peak hours.
I haven't heard that.
No. I don't know that for special events or visits or something.
I mean, they do use them. They're out there, but...
Only if Trump's going by.
Yeah. You get a lot of them. Right. When Donald's going by, you'll see 20 of them.
Right.
Because they can weave through heavy traffic and help traffic flow, but you never see them.
No, you don't. I don't know why.
All right. Police chiefs, if you're listening, there you go.
There you go.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Okay, thanks for calling. Again, our number is 1-800-743-9576. Question about politics or otherwise in Palm Beach or Broward counties. 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio@wlrn.org.
Dan Christensen, let's turn to Hallandale City Commissioner and pastor, most importantly, Anthony Sanders.
Yeah, Anthony's got troubles here. Earlier this month, the Inspector General's office, they didn't release it. It got leaked. It's a preliminary report that said that Commissioner and Pastor Sanders, quote, engaged in a pattern of misconduct, unquote, when he, quote, failed to disclose payments, unquote, made to him and other family members by a community group which Sanders voted to give thousands of dollars in city grants and other funding. It was a scathing report. It's not final, but it'll probably be final soon. And it involved a group called the Palms Community Action Coalition that made contractual payments to a company called Higher Vision Ministries, where Sanders is the pastor and the only full-time employee. The report went on to add that he actually...
And Palms Community Actions is a PAC.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a PCAC is the thing, but it's not a PAC. It's a community action group. I think they do job stuff, finding for people.
Procurement.
And anyway, he apparently solicited and received contributions for his church from developers seeking to do business with the city as well here. And if sustained, they've said in the report, which again isn't final, that they were going to file an ethics complaint against him with the Florida Commission on Ethics, which should not be much of a big threat because they never do anything. But if sustained, the allegations would violate provisions of state, county, and municipal codes that prohibit elected officials from receiving anything of value to influence their vote here. And there's already been some action taken by, they have a new city manager down there. They've got a new majority on the commission here that has brought in a guy who seems to be determined to clean things up in that city. His name is Roger Carlton. He used to be out on the beach. I don't know if he was Miami Beach. I don't know if he was city manager there, but he'd been there for a while, as I understand it. Anyway, he issued a report even before this came out that our reporter Bill Gebre, William Gebre, found out about, in which he essentially froze the city programs that were involved in this, saying that, quote, they have lost their way, which is sort of an interesting phrase for
putting it.
Do we know, does the church that the money went to do any job searches or job programs? I mean, it would still be self-dealing, but
yeah.
Do we know what the money went for, supposedly?
No, we don't know specifically what it... Well, wait a minute. Let me take a look at this. It says that Commissioner Sanders continued taking salary from his employer, continued accepting significant payments from the Palms Community Action Coalition on behalf of his employer, failed to abstain from voting, failed to disclose the voting conflicts to the voting body, either verbally or in writing, directly and indirectly solicited developers to give contributions to his employer and accepted those contributions on behalf of his employer, which was Higher Vision Ministries.
Does that, you know, it seems like, how do people think they can get away with doing things that are so blatant?
Well, this has been going on for a number of years. Why do we have corruption in all our cities? Because people think they can get away with it, which suggests that a lot of people probably do get away with
right.
it.
Dan, we're running a little bit short on time, so I want you to explain to people more about the Florida Bulldog and how they can access it and really what you do and why it's important.
All right. I've been a journalist in town, you know, in South Florida. I worked at the Miami Herald prior. I got laid off, and that's when I started Florida Bulldog in 2009. We're a 501c3 charity, and we accept contributions. They're tax deductible, and we are a what we call a watchdog news organization. We're trying to report on stuff that the papers don't report on. I think this class action lawsuit story by Francisco Alvarado is a perfect example of that. Here, this had been going on for a while. Nobody saw fit to write anything about it. And today, because the story was published today, it's getting a very good run on our website, which means there's a lot of interest in this story.
And this isn't a typical blog. These are your staff are very well-known
professional
journalists.
Yeah, everybody is experienced. Bill Gebre, William Gebre, who wrote
very
the stories.
Very familiar byline.
Yeah, if you've been around in town, you know about it. He worked for the Miami News. He covered city. If anybody remembers the Miami News, that's where I met Bill. He covered City Hall there for a number of years. Then the news folded at the end of 1988. I went on to work for the Daily Business Review, where I met Tony. Right, and
you
then,
just mentioned Francis Alvarado, who's
right.
also a Daily Business Review.
Right, Frank.
Alum.
Right, Frank was there as well
from the New Times.
And well, he went on to the New Times after he was at the Daily Business Review. Yeah, that actually there was quite a few people that went on to other things from there, and. But anyway, we're today, you know, we've been running the Bulldog now for coming up on 8 full years. And we have a number of significant contributors. Armando Codina in Miami has given us a significant contribution. Ed Williamson, Armando is a significant developer.
Very well known.
Ed Williamson, the guy who owns Cadillac dealership in South Dade, he has been a significant supporter of us. Merritt Stierheim, former county manager in Dade County and also former superintendent of schools here. He is on our board of directors, along with Doug Clifton, former executive editor of the Miami Herald, and, you know, other notable people here. So we are a significant organization. We've broken a number of stories. Some of our stories don't make it past the Bulldog for some reason. It's going to be interesting to see, is this Wasserman Schultz story, Democratic National Committee story.
Does it have legs?
Yeah. Well, does anybody pick it up and report on it? Exactly.
Well, same thing with the Saudi Arabian influence
yes.
in 9/11.
Yes.
Dan's folks have been the only people in the country for, you know, 10 years, mostly for 10 years, following that. And that's something that just would not come out and needs to come out. And he's, you know, these are top-notch journalists that are following that.
And yeah, it's
I didn't pay Tony
to
that.
Say that. But
Tony
talking, yeah, Tony.
Novelist.
Yes, Tony's a novelist. He's written Dirt and Floater.
He likes one-word titles.
Yes.
Yeah, they charge by the words.
Tony, you also had a story about Trump in Palm Beach.
I did. You know, there's a Trump Plaza on the waterfront in West Palm Beach. It's actually two buildings, condos. Trump bought them out of foreclosure. The developer was going. Belly up back in the early 80s, and Trump got a hold of them and threw in money and borrowed money, and he promptly was forced by his lender to auction off most of the units or whatever he had left to get out from under a personal loan guarantee. So recently it came up because people were asked in the condominium, there were a handful of people that said, should we take the name Trump off the building? I mean, he's at 30% in the, 36% in the popularity ratings. Overwhelmingly, the residents said, no, we're keeping that name. A lot of them are international people who live there, and they say the Trump name on a building generally has cachet, and so they're keeping it. So there you go.
All right, that's Tony Doris. He's a veteran journalist, editor, columnist, investigative reporter, and novelist. He's been with the Palm Beach Post for 13 years. And Dan Christensen is award-winning investigative reporter, formerly with the Miami Herald, Daily Business Review. He's founder and editor of the Florida Bulldog. It's FloridaBulldog.com.
.org.
.org.
Only online. No paper.
Yeah, and it's really an important publication. Thank you both.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in. Apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. This edition produced by Richard Ives, technical direction from online producer Jason Zapka, and Polly Landis is associate producer. And as always, if you didn't hear the whole hour or you want a friend to listen, it's easy to download free audio archives of each program from our website, WLRN.org. Also, we have the Topical Currents Facebook page, as well as the Topical Currents iTunes podcast. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Here and Now is next from NPR News.